listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host extraordinaire, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox.
And each week we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing options to raising the quality of life for the whole family.
And we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
With each of us having more than 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we have been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us.
And we'll bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, I want to ask you, do you ever wonder who you are, why you are doing the things that you're doing, why you behave the way that you do, or what is your reality? Our guest today, John McGrail, PhD, is a renowned clinical psychotherapist and a personal improvement expert, as well as a spiritual teacher and a leading media expert on the topic of personal improvement. He's going to be able to share some of the answers to some of those things. He is also a former military officer, an aviator, and mass media professional. Dr. McGrail combined more than 30 years of teaching, coaching, and mentoring experience with his work in clinical hypnotherapy to create what he calls synthesis, a powerful process for creating personal change and transformation quickly and profoundly.
Now, Dr. McGrail's writing expertise has been featured in numerous national publications, major online outlets, and radio and television shows across the country and abroad. And his new book, The Synthesis Effect, shares and teaches his techniques, and I might add, is receiving rave reviews. So when not helping people learn to live by his rule number one, which is life is supposed to be fun, he is also an avid golfer and a blue water fisherman. Dr. McGrail also resides and practices right here in Los Angeles, California. Dr. McGrail, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hi, Melanie. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, we are excited to have you here today. Now, your title of the book is really what fascinates me. You're talking about synthesis.
Yes.
And it sounds so scientific. I remember hearing that word first in science class in elementary school. So for everybody, explain what synthesis is.
Well, if you take the dictionary definition of synthesis, it is bringing together different ingredients, often quite disparate ingredients, to create a stronger whole. And that's really what my therapeutic and personal development process is about. It's about using different techniques, methods, modalities, traditions, working with both the conscious cognitive part of the mind and the more abstract subconscious part of the mind, which is really the most powerful part of the mind. And when you bring these techniques and tools together, we create change and growth and personal transformation quickly and profoundly. That's the synthesis effect. Synthesis itself is the process to do that.
Okay, so break down a little bit more about how synthesis works.
Well, you know, we in Western society have been programmed to really rely on our conscious mind for almost everything. And we have a philosophy, and our whole scientific disciplines are about empiricism. I'll believe it when I see it. And the thing is that the subconscious part of the mind is really where most all of our behaviors, emotional patterns, beliefs, values, and habits, fears, and phobias arise. And the subconscious mind works very much like a computer. Once it's programmed, it will run the programs, good or bad, over and over and over again. So if you have a habit or an emotional pattern, low self-esteem, low self-confidence, limiting beliefs about yourself and your abilities to create the life you want, almost all of that's coming from the subconscious computer, if you will. So in order to change it, like any computer, you have to change the software. You have to get rid of what's not working or unlearn it and then relearn what will work for you, and that's what synthesis does. Using hypnosis and meditation is two of the most powerful tools to reach the subconscious, creating an open, receptive state of mind. It really is a process of unlearning what's not working and then relearning, reteaching your mind, your computer, if you will, to work the way you want it to. And then when we combine that with some very powerful cognitive, conscious exercises, the two integrate and suddenly you're feeling different, you're behaving differently, and your life is working the way you want it to rather than the way you thought you were stuck with.
Yeah, John, and I've had a chance now to read. I'm about a third of the way through the book, and first of all, I just want to tell everybody, I'm very impressed. It is a really good book. It really gets right to the heart of things. And one of the questions is, and again, this is someone who hasn't finished the book yet, is there any limitation to what synthesis can be used for or applied to?
Well, of course, there is no silver bullet, and every method and technique has limitations. However, I can say that these methods and the synthesis model work across the spectrum of human behavior. There are certain, you know, organic brain issues or psychoses that would not be indicated for this. But for the worried well of the world, and that's most of us, 85% of us have stuff in our lives that we would like to change and are having problems doing so, this works really, really well. And I've worked with thousands and thousands and thousands of people over the years. And the reason I wrote the book is because I had so many clients say, you know, I cannot believe how quickly I'm feeling differently and behaving differently. And I said, Don, you got to write a book about this stuff. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's really where it came from. And thank you very much. I appreciate the fact that you enjoy it, that you're enjoying it. And the reviews that I've been getting on Amazon have been terrific, so I think it's hitting the mark as far as my intentions, which was a way to help people understand how and why we get messed up, because almost all of us just sort of, we get so ingrained with it. You know, I have clients that come in to me and I'll say, okay, so where did this issue start, this fear or this phobia or this belief that you're not good enough, or that you don't deserve to have a good job or a good relationship. Where did that come from? And almost always they'll say, well, you know what? I don't know. It's just always been there. And so that's where we start with synthesis. We create understanding how and why we get our issues, where they come from, and why it's so hard to get rid of them. And it's not because of weakness or lack of willpower or some deficiency. It's because of the way the human mind is wired. Then we present tools and a process with which to use those tools to create the things that the person desires.
Yeah, what I liked about this was you mentioned earlier that, you know, it works in virtually any issue, and I would imagine that's physical, emotional, and spiritual.
Right, and it's very much about integrating physical, emotional, and spiritual energies. You know, when it comes down to brass tacks, and you know, we are really nothing more than energy machines. We don't like to think of ourselves that way, but that's what the science is indicating. And what happens is that we get imbalance in our energies, either physically, emotionally, or spiritually. Usually it's a combination of all three. And so the process really, I'm really glad you brought this up, the process really is about integrating those three energies. And when you are balanced and integrated physically, emotionally, and spiritually, it is amazing how well your life works.
Yeah. Could you break down a little bit more about the physical energy, what that is, and the emotional and the spiritual? Because I know in your
book
you talk about
it's pretty easy to understand. And of course, this isn't the way it really works, but this is how we feel. And what I found out early on, and one of the reasons this method works so well, is it's because I've been able to construct models that help people understand how they feel. And physical energy is very simple. That's the energy of our body, the vehicle that takes us through this life. And to balance physical energy is very simple. Eat well, move it, get enough sleep, have a way to process the stress that is endemic in our society today, and if you can do that, your body will stay healthy and last a very long time. Emotional energy is what I attribute to what we would call the ego, the identity, the John, the melody, the part of us that says, this is me, I. And that's the part that gets us into trouble most of the time, because the ego arising from the subconscious is really about 3 years old and never gets much older. And so it will, like any three-year-old, first of all, believe whatever it's told, and it will get out of the playpen and get into trouble if you let it, and that's what happens to us. And then we don't nurture spiritual energy very well in our society. And of course, spiritual energy and religion are two different things. They can come together quite nicely. Quite often they don't, unfortunately. But the spiritual energy is the essence of our consciousness. And the cool part about that, Melody, is that science is proving that this energy we call spirit actually exists. Mm-hmm. And that energy is really the most powerful part of us, and we don't pay much attention to it in Western society, as opposed to the ancient cultures, the indigenous cultures like Native Americans and the ancient Eastern cultures, which paid enormous amount of attention to nurturing the spirit. So quite often, the whole process is really about helping people get back in touch with that part of themselves, and it's not a very difficult thing to do at all. And once we get those energies balanced, you have a healthy, happy, productive person that's producing the abundance and joy that we all deserve to have.
Now, John, you mentioned a little bit about what we're not doing as far as Western culture, and I tend to agree with that. And one of the points that I love in the book is that life is supposed to be fun. I mean, what is it that we're doing in our Western society that is that different, that for some reason we've gotten into this point that it's not fun and that it somehow has to be a struggle?
It's an interesting thing, and it's been a process that's been in play for about 500 or 600 years. And really, I trace it back to the Great Enlightenment, and to make it as brief as possible, when we underwent as a society, as a culture, as a species, the Great Enlightenment in the Middle Ages, you know, we had been living under the aegis of church and science being one, and everything was about that. And of course, it started with Copernicus, who said, you know what, the Earth isn't the center of the universe, and he proved scientifically that it wasn't, and of course, that opened the floodgates. And what happened was we said, okay, no more, are we just going to accept things on blind faith. It's not just God controlling this or that. We're going to have this thing called science, and if it's not proven, if I can't prove it with facts, then it doesn't exist. And that is the mentality that arose. And unfortunately, when we separated religion from science, which was a very good thing to do, obviously, we forgot that spirit and religion are not necessarily the same thing. And so we basically got ourselves into a position where we have to prove everything. We have to see things in order to believe it. That's the way Western minds think. I'll believe it when I see it. Now, the ancient cultures, the indigenous cultures, and again, I'll use our Native Americans because most all of us are familiar with them, they thought exactly the opposite way. They believe in order to see. And the very cool thing is that modern science in the world of quantum physics and quantum field theory is now proving, using our very scientific rigor, that the way the ancients and the Native cultures thought is the way the world really works. And it is absolutely fascinating to read some of the discoveries they're making, but what it boils down to is this. You have to believe first and project that energy out in order to attract it back, rather than waiting for something to happen so that you can then believe it. And it is a fundamental flip in thinking, and the cool part is that science is proving that kind of thinking is what really manifests reality.
And when you're talking about the spirituality and all that, and thinking about it and believing it, what are some of the tools? I know in your book you mentioned meditation and hypnosis, and how does that play a part in this whole synthesis?
Well, first of all, hypnosis and meditation are grossly misunderstood in Western society. So let's just address that. Hypnosis is nothing more than a natural state of consciousness that every normal human brain experiences every day. By the way, we all do hypnosis every day. And I'll give you some examples, but the reason it's such a powerful tool in the synthesis process in creating change and transformation is because it creates a very open, receptive state of mind. Meditation is essentially the same state of consciousness. Again, an open, receptive, highly focused state of mind. The chief difference between hypnosis and meditation is in their application. Hypnosis, traditionally, and by the way, it's been in use for 7,000 years, so there must be a reason for it, and that's because it works. Hypnosis is used to create change on a short-term basis, usually one acute issue like a habit or a fear or a phobia or building self-confidence. And meditation is used for long-term systemic well-being. So when you combine the two, they become a very powerful tool for helping create change and then maintaining it. And that's really what they are valuable for. And again, they are simply natural states of consciousness. Anytime you watch a film or a movie and feel emotion, or drive down the freeway and zone out, which I'm infamous for doing, or you read a good book and you can't put it down, or you just sit and daydream, you are actually entering a state of hypnosis. And we do it all the time. If you can remember that the subconscious part of the mind is 3 years old, if you can reach it without the critical filter of the conscious mind in the way, although the conscious mind participates, if a three-year-old is taught 2 + 2 = 5, like, you're never going to amount to anything. You're just a bum. If you tell a little kid that from the time he or she is born until the time they're teenagers, that becomes their reality.
Right.
And they believe it. There's no basis in fact. It's just something someone told you. Well, the subconscious mind is what creates that pattern. And so what we basically do with hypnosis is we go in and we say to that three-year-old, you know, little girl, little boy, 2 + 2 isn't 5. You've got some bad information. Try this instead. 2 + 2 is 4. Because there's an adult up here in the conscious mind that knows if you do it, you're gonna feel way better. And that's really what hypnosis is useful for. It is so misunderstood. We cannot control anybody. We can't make anybody do what they don't want to do. We can't program people to go rob banks or jump off buildings. That's all just bad B-movie hokey. Yeah. It is just that. It creates an open, receptive state of mind, a very innocent, childlike state of mind, so that we can work with the little child inside of us, the three-year-old, the subconscious.
Right.
Well, and again, while we're talking about hypnosis, and in those situations where somebody's been conditioned to believe something that we all know is inaccurate, I mean, does it depend on how deep-seated that is as to how long it's going to take to get that person, in this case, to recognize that 2 + 2 is actually 4? How long do they actually fight you on that no, it's 5 because I've been told for the last, 8 years or something like that?
Well, you know, often it's not 8 years, it's 30 or 40 years, because most of my clients are adults, although I do work with a lot of kids, and kids are much easier to reach because they haven't been as entrained with their negative thoughts and beliefs. But the truth of the matter is, because they feel better so quickly, there's no fight. The people who I find who come to see me in my clinical practice and people who come to my workshops and seminars are there because at some level, they know they're not supposed to feel broken. And that's how I like to describe it. When you have an issue, a habit, or you're overweight, or a fear, or a phobia, or what I see more and more today, general anxiety and these limiting beliefs about yourself and just ingrained fear, you know at some level, and that's your spirit talking, that, you know what, it's not supposed to be this way. It's not supposed to be painful and drudgery. So once you allow a person to feel the shift, and often it takes place in the very first session, they feel a shift, then there's no fight, because it's like opening the door and saying, there's the light at the end of the tunnel. And, of course, everybody takes their own time. Every mind is different. Everybody responds at their own pace. But on average, it's only a matter of 3 to 6 sessions for most people across most issues, and they have made the shift. And then I teach all my clients, and it's in the book, how to maintain it with just a little daily reinforcement. That's all it takes, and it's amazing. Suddenly, your life's working the way you want it to. It's fun. And what I mean by fun is not an endless series of parties. What I mean by fun is that when you wake up in the morning, you look forward to your day, you like what you're doing for a living, you've chosen a job that suits your talents, you like the people you're relating to, you like the way you're treating yourself and the way your life is working. That's what I mean by fun. And everybody, I can't overemphasize this, everybody deserves that, and we can all create it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Now, going along those lines, we have an instant message that's coming across to us on the screen, so I'm going to read it. It says, during my college years, I was introduced to self-hypnosis and hypnotherapy. I attribute it to being the most important contribution to my ability to graduate with honors. Then it goes in a different direction. It says, as life marches on, I am now finding myself in a career that I hate. And then in parentheses, it says, I'm an attorney, comma, in the middle of a divorce with 2 manipulative teens who could care less if I'm on the planet except for when they need access to my wallet. It says, I went to a hypnotherapist 2 months ago, and honestly, I'm more depressed than when I started. It says, this may sound desperate, but how does your process actually make a difference, and how would it apply to a middle-aged woman in my situation who has used self-hypnosis in the past and who now feels she's just losing it?
Wow.
Wow. That's big question.
Yeah.
And the first thing I will say is that, you know, like any profession, like any service, medicine, dentistry, psychiatry, psychotherapy, the tools are the tools, and how they're used is what makes the difference between practitioners. You could go to 5 different surgeons and get 5 different results, or 5 different psychiatrists and they'd give you 5 different medications. So hypnotherapy in and of itself is not the answer. And I'm not casting any dispersions on the practitioner she saw, but I have no idea what that person did or their approach, and everybody goes about it their own way. There are a lot of issues there. First of all, teenagers, well, in a way, their job is to be rebellious, and that's something that, you know, we have to deal with at a certain level. And where did that come from? You know, they're not that doesn't happen overnight. So there's probably a process in there for reestablishing better communications and understanding, helping them find their way with, you know, appropriate discipline and guidance. And that can be changed. That dynamic can be changed. And part of the reason they may be so rebellious is because they see that their mom is not a very happy camper. As far as career is concerned, you know, we all go through that. And it's funny. I used to teach LSAT preparation for would-be attorneys, and the statistics around the legal profession are pretty dismal anyway. 75% of the people who choose the law for a profession regret it. And I'm not saying that that's the answer, but there is probably a way, given the right coaching and the right approach, that she can find a way to turn the dynamic of her career around. And without knowing her and knowing her specific situation, I can't give you definite ideas because, again, everybody has their own dynamics. Mm-hmm. But I can say this, and you can tell her this, all of that is changeable. It is her mind. It is always our mind. We own it. It is our life, and we get to drive the bus of our life or not. And what happens to so many of us is that we get into these situations and patterns, and once we're in them, we will cling to them with tenacity, even when they're terrible. And that's just, again, part of the way the human mind has evolved. So what we would do is, first of all, dig down, peel that onion back, find out what the dynamics really are, and then use the tools of synthesis to help change the dynamics. As I tell every single client, it's your mind, you own it, and you can make it do what you want it to do rather than what it's doing. It's difficult. Most people do need a little help. And with the right practitioner, with the right coach, with the right therapist, the help is out there and it absolutely is doable. So while I wish I could just say, do this, do this, do this, do this, without knowing more about the specific case, and you can give her my name and number, I'd be happy to talk with her or trade emails and answer her questions specifically. I'm happy to do that to any of the listeners out here that have questions. Without more specifics, it would be hard to tell exactly what to do, but I do know this. I've worked with thousands of people over the last 12 or so years, and the vast majority of them achieve the change they want to change, whether it's career, relationships, habits, whatever it is that's not working can be undone.
Well, and John, and I think to add to that, and again, as I said earlier, that I am reading the book. First, I want to let anybody know that it, as far as if you want to get a hold of John, as this caller might want to, he has a website. You can go to www.drjohnmcgrail.com. That's drjohnmcgrail.com. Again, if you're driving, if you can't take that down, go to our website, the Answers for the Family blog, and we'll have his information on there. Mm-hmm. Now, John, just to add a little bit to what you were saying, there was one of the things that I saw in regards to the hypnosis or the hypnotherapy, and I think it goes right into what you said. You're going to see a different person. You may get a different effect as it affects you, and that is that when they were in college, they went and saw somebody, and it was great, and they give all of this importance and give them so much credit for their ability to graduate with honors. You know, so obviously it worked that time in their mind, and then now it's not working. And I think maybe more so the common denominator here is that where their life is gone. And I think, again, just with what I've been reading in the book myself, is, you know, the common denominator is you. If a lot of things are going bad in your life, maybe you need to look inward.
I couldn't say that better, Alan. It's absolutely always a question of looking inward. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because we feel, and it feels this way, it feels like life is happening to us, when in reality, we are creating it. And, you know, I get people all the time that say, well, who would purposely create a disease, or who would purposely create depression? Or who? We don't purposely do it. We do it subconsciously. And again, that subconscious computer, I keep calling it a computer because it operates so much like a computer. The subconscious mind is about 90% of the average human mind, which leaves 10% for the conscious cognitive mind. And we rely so much on the 10%. But let me ask your listeners, think about this, folks. How often do you go through your day and really think about how you're reacting to situations, the choices you're making, the thoughts you're having. How often do you do that? Or do you just get up in the morning and you go through, it's almost like you're a robot, you just go through your day and you behave, things happen and you react. Now, how you react is always a choice, but because we get programmed to react a certain way, we do. For instance, you're driving along the freeway and here we are in LA and boom, it slows down, you're in traffic. Now, some people are programmed, if you will, to get all stressed out and wigged out. They're going to be late for their meeting and la, 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 in L.A. traffic, and they get all worked up. But you could also say, oh, well, I'm in traffic. I live in L.A., and that's the way it is. So, oh, look at the sky. Look at that hawk over there. Look at the clouds. What a beautiful day. I think I'll just take a few minutes now since I'm not going anywhere. I'm in it, so what am I going to do? I think I'll take a few minutes to just calm down and feel balanced. Mm-hmm. That's a choice you could make, but we don't. We just react. And so you're right, Alan. We believe that life is happening to us and we're sort of victims when, in fact, we are creating our circumstances. And since we are creating our reality, if we don't like the reality we're creating, we can change it. Does it take help? Almost always. Is it doable? Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think for those that are out there in their car, you know, if you're feeling stressed in whatever traffic you may be, you know, get some books on tape. You know, put those in your car so that when you're driving and you can't go anywhere, you can focus on whatever subject that you maybe want to be enlightening yourself with at that point. Put that CD in, or in this day and age, plug your iPhone into the car so that you can play it and listen to it that way. So yeah, I agree completely.
Or even better, just take a few moments to slow down and breathe slowly and deeply. One of the exercises I teach in the beginning of the book, I'm sure you've been exposed to it by now, Alan, is simply sitting quietly and taking 21 slow, deep breaths on purpose and with purpose. Mm-hmm. It sounds very easy until you try it, but it's amazing what happens if you just take a little time to be with you. That's another thing that is endemic in our society today. We have to be plugged in. We have to be attached. We have to be stimulated constantly. We want instant gratification. And unfortunately, that creates more imbalance. And so in those moments, you might just decide to turn off the radio and turn off the iPod and just be with yourself for a little bit, and you would be amazed, slow, quiet breathing, how calming that is, and suddenly what seems so important isn't. One of my favorite books of all time, and I'm sure you both remember it, was written by a fellow named Richard Carlson, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff,
sure.
And the subtitle
mm-hmm.
was, And It's All Small Stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? 99% of the stuff that we get all worked up about and wigged out about is really not really very important if you take the time to think about it. So any of those solutions would be good. But I love to teach my clients just to learn how to be with themselves. It's an amazing gift that we re-give ourselves, because when we're little, we know how to do it, and then society sort of beats it out of us.
Right. And a lot of what you're talking about, too, sounds to be really being more mindful of being in the moment, of being grounded, especially if you're feeling a little bit out of control or stressed out on that drive, to breathe, be aware of what's going on, use all your senses, which is kind of what you do in hypnosis, too. You're focused on the breathing, you're being relaxed, you're going into yourself and figuring out what's going on right here, right now in our bodies.
Absolutely. We spend so much of our energy, and we have to remember that we only have so much energy that we can budget in a given moment in time, and so many people invest so much energy in stuff that's already done, the past, and it could be years and years ago, and they still get all worked up about it, and then they spend this enormous amount of energy worrying about something that hasn't happened yet, the future. Meanwhile, as John Lennon said, life is happening now. And the only thing we ever really get to live is now. And so when you learn how to be mindful and present and live now, and it takes practice because we're not taught to do it, then suddenly you can use the past for what it's good for. And in my opinion, my theory is the past is good for learning and nothing more. Mm-hmm. So learn what you need to learn. You make a choice, you get a result. If you like the result, great, make that choice again. If you don't like the result, learn from it and move on, because it's done. You can't redo it. And the more mindful you get, the more you use the learning from your past, the more powerful future you can actually sort of prepave. You can pre-program the reality that you want to create. And that's part of the synthesis process, is to be where I am, know what I want, and what's the next step to get there. And let me do that in a mindful present state. It's incredible how wonderful and powerful that feels. And it's a skill that has to be learned because we are not taught to do that. The good news is it doesn't take very long to learn, and with a little practice, you get so good at it that your life virtually begins to flow powerfully. And I believe that you get to a state where you're living virtually without suffering. I mean, it's never going to be perfect. And the Buddha said, enlightenment is the end of suffering. I believe that every single one of us has the ability, with a little bit of applied energy, to live a life virtually free of suffering. And I call that practical enlightenment, which is the ultimate goal for synthesis.
Well, in your book, The Synthesis Effect, I mean, the subtitle is Your Direct Path to Personal Power and Transformation. You really take people through all the steps in the book and really give them a lot of powerful tools to utilize. And with that in mind, we have another listener question that I got emailed to me earlier. It's, I am a program director of a small rehab school facility in Tennessee, and we specialize in abused and runaway teen girls who have substance abuse problems. At the core of what we're dealing with is a great deal of fear and depression. I purchased your book for myself last week after reading it about it on Alan's site. I'm almost finished and would like to approach my superiors about implementing some of your techniques. I personally, Melody, would think that's a great idea. Now, to continue, my question is regarding the synthesis process is how to deal with the spiritual components as they're strictly prohibitive from ever introducing this topic to any student in our program.
Wow. Well, I think there may be a little bit of a mix-up between spirit and religion in that particular case. I'm not sure. But, you know, the thing is, again, we have this gross misunderstanding about what spirit and spirituality is. So the way I would approach it is not use the word spirit. You don't have to use it. You can say consciousness, mm-hmm. your essence, what makes you you. And that in and of itself is your spirit, but you don't have to use the word. And so the way I would go about doing that is to say these exercises are going to help you get back in touch with your essence, which is so powerful. Unfortunately, because of the way society works, and you've been battered around and abused, and it's terrible. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to live with that anymore. But you need to get back in touch with your inner power, and that inner power is just it's like an oil well that just needs to be tapped. And once it does, it will gush. So you might go about doing it that way, and never use the word spirit. You don't need to. It's there whether you call it spirit or not. It's there.
Right.
That would be my first step. And again, I would love to discuss that more in detail because, you know, I'm just giving very, very sort of general answers because I don't have specifics. And I, you know, I don't want to say, well, this is the way without knowing a little bit more about it. But sure. That certainly would be one approach, is just to not call it that. Call it something else.
Yeah. There seems to be a lot of defensiveness about when you want to start adding spiritual things, especially, I don't know, in like county facilities and places where you're really restricted on what you could do. You support where they're at, but you're not really allowed to introduce a lot of new theories or ideas or dogmas or anything else because there's such a fear of, I don't know, just a lot of fear out there.
Yeah, and I think, again, you know, we have forgotten the essential essence of all of us is an energy of consciousness, and that's really what spirit is. And when people think of spirituality, they think of very abstract sort of, you know, woo-woo crystals and gongs and that sort of thing. But our ancients, our ancestors all had a philosophy, and I love this, and this is one of the reasons that got me started on this. The ancient cultures of the world, the native cultures of the world, were separated by vast geographies and vast distances, and yet if you read their philosophies and you get by the what I call the cultural semantics, because there are different, you know, rituals and whatnot, the basis of their philosophy was incredibly similar, and that was that you are nothing more than an energetic being, and if you live in energetic balance with your world, with the earth, with the universe, if you will, and again, as soon as you say the word universe, people get scared, but the truth of the matter is that's all you are, is energy. If you learn to balance your energy so that your emotional energy is being nurtured by the essence of your consciousness and you're more aware of the choices you're making, you can choose thoughts that serve your growth, your well-being, and the greater good. Now, what I just said is spiritual, but I never used the word once. Mm-hmm. And so there it is. It's just acknowledging what we are, and the science is there to prove it. That's one of the things that I love so much about where modern science is going, is that science and spirituality are coming back together.
Right.
And they've been separated for about 600 years, but they're coming back together whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. We are starting to acknowledge what we really are.
Now, we're getting close to having to wrap things up, and I want to make sure I mention this, but, I mean, in the world, we talk about cause and effect, and you've mentioned in your book the need to be at cause rather than at effect in order to improve your life. What do you mean by that?
Well, quickly stated, Melody, it's very simple. As I mentioned before, we all have the feeling that life is happening to us. That's how it feels. And when you're at effect, that's exactly where you are. You're just letting the world sort of roll you over. Being a cause is very simple. Being a cause is simply this. It says, or the shift in energy is, I and I alone am responsible for how my life works. I am responsible for my happiness. I am responsible for the choices I make. And I'm going to take that responsibility so that I cause the reality I want, rather than just letting the reality that I think I have roll me over. That's what being a cause is. It's taking responsibility for how your life works and stop and releasing the mantle of being a victim, and because it's an easy one. You love to blame mom and dad. Oh, yeah, it was my mother and father. Well, yeah, probably was, but guess what? It's over. And so that's what being a cause is about. It's taking that responsibility for your choices and how your life unfolds. And when you do that with purpose, on purpose, and you have a set of tools, again, it's incredible how quickly and profoundly your energy shifts and how quickly and profoundly what you attract shifts.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, I've been reading this at the gym, and some of the people at the gym know what I do for a living. And over the weekend, a gentleman next to me asked me what I'm reading this time, because I always, every week I have a different book. And so he asked me what I was reading, and so I started to explain it to him. And he said, okay, well, what is different about that? Why is that different? I've been doing this for 3 years, so he's seen me with a lot of books that might be self-improvement or whatever. And so he just says, so what is different? And I said, you know what? I said, I want to remember to ask that. So why don't you share with us, and I hope he's listening, what makes this book special or different from a lot of the other books that touch on this subject?
Okay. Well, I'm glad you asked that. I, first of all, I believe that all books on this subject are special. And as I mentioned earlier, there is no silver bullet. There is no absolute one way. But one of the things I have found over the years, and I've read hundreds and hundreds of books on self-improvement and spiritual development, and one of the things that I have found over and over again is that very often the authors, probably not on purpose, but they come across as some sort of an expert who knows more than we do and somehow is superior. And so they're saying, you know, this is what I know. And I purposely chose to write this book in a different way. I wanted it to be, first of all, very casual and conversational, and I wanted to inject as much humor as possible. And I wrote it to be very conversational. It's like having a session with me. And as I say to my clients, and I'll say to all your listeners, I am just a regular guy. I had my own stuff. I was at effect in my life and not a very happy camper. I was an addicted smoker, and I was insecure, and I had my first marriage, you know, was terrible in many ways, and I went through the same transformation that I teach my clients to go through. And so I wrote the book to be sort of like a chat, very casual, and just saying, hey, look, here am I, this is what I did. Oh, and by the way, as you learn this process, here are the stories of a whole bunch of people, just like you and me, that went through the process too. And so while my readers are learning how to do it and learning that they can take this control for their lives and be at cause and create their own reality, their joy, here are stories of folks just like them, everyday folks from all walks of life, because I deal with people from all walks of life, that also did it. So you can, I shared those stories, and I shared a lot of my own story. And I think if there's a difference, it's that. And I make it very clear how to do it. And I admit in the book that this may not be the answer. And if this book alone is not enough for you and you need extra help, here's how you can find it. Mm-hmm. So I give my readers guidance to finding the assistance that they might need if the book in and of itself is not enough.
Right.
I guess if I could say it, because it sounds immodest, that's what makes it special. And again, that was my intention when I wrote it. The very good news from my perspective is that the reviews I'm getting, particularly on Amazon and some of these other places, are sort of affirming that that's exactly what people are getting from it. So I'm gratified that I actually I hit the mark.
Yeah, well, we're thrilled, and we're so happy that you're with us today on Answers for the Family. We've been talking to Dr. John McGrail. He is the author of The Synthesis Effect, Your Direct Path to Personal Power and Transformation. It's a marvelous book, Dr. John, and I really enjoyed reading over it, and I plan on rereading it again, and of course, I always keep it in my office for my clients to take a look at as well. If you want more information, you can get it again at www.drjohnmcgrail.com or thesynthesiseffect.com. And again, thank you so much for joining us.
And John, yes, thank you. And I would love to have you do this again, only next time let's have you come in studio, okay?
Well, I would be delighted, Alan and Dr. Melody. It's been a real pleasure. And anytime you want me to come back, I'd love to. But we have just scratched the surface. There are so many areas that we can apply this to, and particularly family dynamics is very amenable to these techniques, parents and kids and teenagers.
Sure.
The good news is I work with that whole age range, and they all mostly do well. Mm-hmm. So thanks. I'll come back anytime, and I'd love to be in studio.
That would be great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and have a wonderful
Okay, you both have a great day, and thanks to all your listeners for tuning in today.
Okay. And for our listeners of Answers for the Family, we're going to go to a brief commercial break, and we're going to be back with a special guest in just a few moments. Stand by.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back for more Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Dr. Melody Fox, along with Alan Cardoza. And, you know, turning to a little bit more serious note, we have our special guest today, Logan Clark, who is rejoining us here in the studio. There has been a lot of talk in the news recently, specifically on Dateline, about how the Middle East and what's going on in there is affecting our humanitarian efforts and keeping people from leaving that want to leave and this, that, and the other. I'd like to know your thoughts on this because I know this is an important topic for you and Alan and everyone.
Yeah. I was watching it started me thinking last night. I was watching – Alan and I were up in the East Coast working on cases, and there's a lot of things that that's going on around the world, especially in the Middle East with all the embassies and all the attacks and the bombings and stuff. And it's affecting – obviously it's affecting the world, but what it's affecting at the same time – is NGOs, non-government organizations, the World Health Organization, human trafficking organizations, people like us that are doing rescues in these countries and rescue even parental kidnappings, which are vicious.
Mm-hmm.
There all these things that happen where we have people out doing rescues. These countries are exploding, and we're pulling agents back like chess pieces, just absolutely sitting there and just immediately pulling people out of these countries as fast as we can. And what never gets publicized is all of the non-government organizations, all of these humanitarian things that are going on in these countries are being completely shut down, diverted, I mean, literally stopped in Africa, in the Middle East. It just shuts down all of these humanitarian efforts that are monstrous to the public and to lives and everything. And there's never any publicity on that. It's always about the military and what's going on with the military and the countries and war and is there going to be war and is there... But the civilians, the things that are going on with those countries, those civilians, are very rarely ever talked about.
Right. And there's a lot of people that have family members that are involved nurses and doctors that go over to these countries and on humanitarian efforts and trying to help better the lives and help people there. And they're getting stuck. They can't get out. They can't
leave. They're getting stuck. There's rescue operations getting them out. And then when they do get out, they don't want to go back. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the greatness that they have in their heart and everything else that they want to do and what they're doing over there, it's just too dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's and much less you become a target for kidnapping yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally.
Yeah, and there's a lot of human trafficking, too, all over the world, and especially in some of those countries.
It's horrible. We have cases right now of human trafficking in two or three different countries that mm-hmm. we are trying to get people out. Mm-hmm. And it's so volatile that they don't think we're there for, they think we're there for bad reasons. They think we're there for something against their government mm-hmm. or that we're spies or something. And all we're doing is we're trying to rescue some 12-year-old girl mm-hmm. that's in sexual slavery, mm-hmm. you know, in this country. And that's really why we're there. Mm-hmm. But we look or appear or we travel in the circles that the terrorists and the bad guys, mm-hmm. and they look at us as, wow, they must be bad guys if they're being careful, if they're sneaking around in this country, mm-hmm. they must be up to no good.
Yes, I would imagine. I know you and your company, and you go all over the world, especially with parental kidnapping, and there's a lot of that going on, especially in the Middle East, and, you know, well, it's all over. But
yeah, everywhere.
People take the children back there, and then they're not able to get them back to America.
Yeah, there was a story on Dateline last night about this point. I should have written. I didn't plan on doing this today. I was with Alan. But I should have written down the names. But this boy, it's been covered for years. Over the last 7 years, this boy that was taken to Brazil, but kidnapped by his mother, taken to Brazil, and then a few years later, and then she remarried a guy, and then she died. And in childbirth. And then the Brazilian family, the in-laws, all kept the child and kept fighting. And, of course, the person she married was a powerful Brazilian attorney. So it kept this guy's son away from him for 5 years while all this was going on. And Alan and I have been in Brazil doing these things. Mm-hmm. And it's just parental kidnapping, which to me is amazing. They, you know, we work in human trafficking, sex slavery, and everything else. And these are vicious, horrible, subhuman crimes. Mm-hmm. People blow off parental kidnapping. They think, oh, well, it's the mother. I'm dealing with one right now in Texas where the police are saying, law enforcement are going, well, they're not really kidnapped. They're with their mother. No. They are kidnapped. Mm-hmm. They're kidnapped. It's a federal law mm-hmm. against it, punishable by 3 years in prison. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason they call it kidnapping. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's insane. And they do it all over the world. But anyway, it's just shutting everything down. There's just not enough publicity mm-hmm. or the public doesn't realize all of these non-governmental things that are going on that are being shut down.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we're glad that you were able to be with us and bring to our awareness a little bit because, you know, we work in all different fields, whether you're educators, psychologists, other detectives, or whoever, parents, family members that are listening to the show. This stuff goes on.
Right.
This is every day. It happens right down the street from you. You would never even know this. We've got runaways that end up in Taiwan, end up in all these different places as sex slaves. This
every
is something
day.
That needs to be stopped, and you're the people that goes to the other country to get them back, and now you're having to pull out and not do that either, as well as the other humanitarian efforts that go on in the other countries trying to get them back safely and just get them back home.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So thank you so much for bringing this to our awareness today. And
yes, and yeah, Logan, and thanks for coming in. And again, for anybody out there, if you want to reach Logan, you can go to logan@loganclark.com.
LoganClark.com.
My email is Logan@LoganClark.com. Yeah,
LoganClark. Exactly. Put an E on Clark.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say that's C-L-A-R-K-E. So go to LoganClark.com. Again, if you're driving, you can also go to the Answers for the Family. Contact us. We'll make sure that we get the information to Logan.
And it's AnswersForTheFamilyBlog.com.
Yes.
And this doctor was great. John
Dr.
is fabulous.
Yes.
I'm so glad I was here listening to this. I want to talk to this man. This guy is really, really sharp.
Yes, he
that
is.
That was so interesting.
Well,
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. Well, we hope to get him back. And again, for everybody out there, we thank you for listening. And please be back with us next week on Answers for the Family.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.